This is the Let's Go Win podcast with your host, J.M. Ryerson.
What is happening, you guys? Welcome back to Let's Go Win. I have the pleasure of bringing on someone. I had a chance to be on his podcast. This dude is awesome. John Marty is the founder of Project 1B, a nonprofit that is on a mission to help 1 billion people around the world unleash their truest selves and discover a sense of meaning and purpose in their work. John was named by LinkedIn as a top voice to follow with over 250,000 global followers. He also has a top 20 YouTube channel for job seekers, and he's worked with Amazon as a senior product manager for the past 4 years. Man, you got a little bit on your plate there, brother. How you been?
Good, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
You know, man, it is truly my pleasure. I remember just having such a good time doing your show. You bring an amazing energy. But all right, let's dive into Project 1B straight away, because a billion, that's with a B. That is not a million. That is a billion. Love the goal, man. Tell me more about it.
Yeah, man. So I think over the past 5-6 years, I've been on a discovery journey of myself, right? Just really trying to understand what was I missing? Why was I not feeling fulfilled, over the years? I learned a lot in school, but I didn't actually learn a lot in school, right? You go through school for 20 years and you say, what on earth? When you hit your 30s or your 40s and you deal with life's real challenges, you just kind of fall apart. And that's what was happening for me. So I said, there's so many people around the world that are facing the same challenges. I do career coaching, life coaching, things like that, right? And every day I have people that are in their 20s or in their 30s or 40s who are coming to me and saying, my God, why is this job the way it is? The matrix is falling apart for a lot of people, right? Because they've been told to believe that as soon as I graduate college and I get the great job, and I get the car, and I get the things, then everything for me is going to be lined up. And oh, by the way, life is linear. I'm going to have this linear, perfect progression. And I don't know where these concepts get conjured up from, right? Maybe it's marketing, doing their job to sell products that if you don't have this, then you're not going to be happy. Maybe it's a portion of society and how we value people with money. We equate people's sense of self-worth or worth of others by the amount of things that they have, the house that they have, the car that they drive, things like that. So there's so many societal forces at play, and I see it every day on the ground level. And what I'm ultimately trying to do with Project 1B is break that pattern. I want people to not chase the money solely, because what happens is you chase the money and you think, oh my God, everything's going to be great once I have the bank account, but it's not. And that's where it falls apart. You know, I was talking to this guy who was 24 years old and he said, John, I'm in this product manager job and it's just not what I thought it would be. Like, I thought that getting this job was going to be the thing. And there's all these politics and things happening in this corporate setting. And I said, buddy, get used to it. That is life in corporate. For the large majority of people, not everywhere, right? But that's life. And there's so much ego wrapped up into that world. And so how do I break that pattern? Project 1B, I feel like needs to start with the younger generations, people who are getting into college, people who are still super impressionable. The schools are not teaching you things about gratitude, what it is to chase a sense of meaning, what it is to chase a sense of purpose, how to decouple your sense of self-worth from the size of your bank account and the amount of money that you have. And you know, these are necessary concepts for us as we get older that we don't have the skills to, you know, to deal with. So even a 1 week deep dive as a camp with a bunch of high school and college students coming together, being able to lean on each other and build a community around that experience, that shared experience with each other, I think will allow them to, open up and have lifelong groups, that lifelong people that they can lean on and say, hey, I'm struggling right now. Because that's another problem in corporate America too. People don't want to show that they're struggling, you know? And so you, in a lot of cases, in a lot of corporate settings, you don't have anyone you feel like you can talk to, because you don't necessarily even feel like other people are going through the same things as you, right? But the reality is that everyone is human and they are all facing the same things. They're all facing the same challenges. They're all going through existential crises when they're in their 40s and going, wait a second, like I bought the car and the house and I, you know, I'm not any happier. The reality is life when you're in your 20s is so much easier than it is when you're in your 30s or 40s. Most people don't have to deal with health challenges. Most people don't have to deal with family members dying, right? Most people have both parents. Most people are living on ramen and not necessarily worried about anything in the future, right? Like they're just partying and having a good time. And yet during that period of time, all of those individuals have so much anxiety and depression about their future when the moment that they're living in at that moment is the easiest time that they're going to have in their lives. They're just in school. They don't have bills to pay. They don't have family. They don't have anything, right? Like I look back at the time now and I say to myself, man, I had it easy. But yet during that time, I was stuck in the same mentality as every other individual who is facing these challenges today.
Yeah, man. So you broke down quite a bit there.
And yeah.
First question, because is this a societal challenge? Is this a corporate challenge? Is this a curriculum challenge? Because what I heard is, look, 20-year-olds love life, love it because love it is amazing. And anybody that is in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, we all look back and go, oh, we were young. We didn't have responsibilities. It's fantastic. So my question, John, straight away is it all three of those? Is challenge, is this, when I say societal, is this more of an American issue than it is, let's say, Spain or some other country, Switzerland or something? So maybe that's what I should start with. Is it all three of those that is the problem?
Yeah. I mean, it touches on a lot of different things, right? I mean, I was joking with my son, recently. I was looking at these like toy catalogs, right? They send you in the mail. You get these like random free flyers from like Toys R Us or whatever. Right. And what you get shown when you're little is the little kid on the Mercedes G-Wagon power scooter, right? Which looks like a Mercedes G-Wagon. It's $350 or whatever. And you go, I want that, right? And then you break down the psychology, like, why do you want that? So the comparison culture mentality happens when we're really young, and it's primal, right? Like it's me versus this other person. What do they have versus what do I have? So it makes sense because it's at the ground level, we're humans and there's these primal instincts, primal subconscious things that are going on, like comparing myself to this person. What are they? What am I? You know, that type of thing. So, but then we get older and then those concepts are reinforced. So, we get a little bit of money. We get sucked into some advertising that says, if you buy this watch, you're going to have this outcome, right? And that's their job to do that, right? Buy the Nike shoe, jump higher, right? Buy the Nike shoe, look cool. Buy the Yeezys, look cool, right? Be accepted. But what's the root of all that? To be accepted, to be loved, right? So, and because we don't know that, we're just doing it subconsciously. We feel like, you know, we're trying to get our status. So, I mean, it's a roundabout way of saying that it touches on all things. It starts really young for us. And because we don't educate on the fact that these patterns even exist, we have this mental struggle as we get older because nobody's even been taught it. And that's why I feel so strongly about it, because it hit me like a ton of bricks. Because for me, in my early 30s, I went totally broke. I was super broke. I had nothing. And so I had just come off of having a company for being an entrepreneur for 13 years, right? So I defined myself, my identity, everything about me was John and the identification with external things as my sense of self. And as soon as I lost all my money, it was like, oh, well, okay, I'm not John as the entrepreneur who had the multimillion dollar company, who has the car, who has this. John is now working at Best Buy for $12 an hour. And everything at that point came crashing down for me. So, because I had to identify with something, right? So I was grasping, like, who do I identify myself with? And then I realized that I didn't need to identify myself or my sense of self worth with any external things. I needed to do it actually, or else I would have gone insane. Because at first it was like this downward spiral, like terrified to go to a barbecue and have somebody say, what do you do? And I'm not doing anything for that matter. I'm trying to get a job. John is no longer a founder of a company with, there's no sexy titles or anything. I'm just John. And so I needed to first be good with being John. And that is what I want to convey to others, right? We don't need to have this association with external things or other forms, even job titles for that matter. Those associations are very dangerous for us. Because as soon as those associations get detached, then we have existential crisis.
Yeah, man. So I'm listening. It's so interesting because we know this exists. The marketers are incredible, whether it's propaganda or it's media. Like, look, they're doing a great job.
Great job.
They are. They're really good. I mean, shoot, senior product manager, Amazon. Amazon might be better than anyone in the world at saying, look, there's something here. You should go get it. Obviously, that doesn't equate to happiness. I think logically knows that, but to really get to the soul. So as you launch Project 1B, how do you do as good a job to offset from a marketing point of view to say, look, that's materialistic. Shoot, there's rap songs, more money, more problems. Like, how do we market and say, look, this identity is not who you are. It's a piece of who you are. That's cool. Yep. And striving for greatness or striving for that career, that's cool, but it's not all who John is or Bob is or whomever it is at the time. How do you get the marketing right so that people, because it, again, it's interesting because the marketer is doing a great job. I can't give them fault for it, but how do we market Project 1B in the same way so that's just as successful?
Yeah. So I like to bucketize these things. And what I mean by that is I think it's important for us in Western society to chase things. It is important. We need to be chasing things. We need to be constantly bettering ourselves. We need to be playing the game, right? If we're in corporate America, there's a game being played. There's a ladder to be climbed. It's important that we create nest eggs for ourselves, but it's one or two things here. One, it's the detachment of self from those things, recognizing that I'm not my goals. I'm not external things. I'm going to chase them, but I'm not going to be of the mental state of if then statements for happiness. I refuse to be in that state, right? If I get this or that, or a job title or a house, then I will be happy, right? It's the pervasive idea that starts when we're young that I am deficient in happiness. Because if every company can convince you that you're deficient in something, then you need to buy it, right? That's how the world works. I just make sure that I separate my sense of self. And the second thing here is just the awareness. So from a Project 1B standpoint, if you can just have people learn about things that are subconscious, you can bring awareness to the fact that we have an ego. You can bring awareness to the fact that meaning doesn't correlate to money, and here's why. You can bring personal stories from others into that arena and have people find those relatable topics. If you can just bring awareness to it, you start thinking a little bit differently. And you start asking a couple questions. And that's all I'm really trying to do is get people to start scratching the surface. Hey, by the way, the reason why we chase money is because it's tied to a sense of self-worth in our society. And people go, wait, what do you mean? Like the root of why we chase. But hey, by the way, I don't necessarily subscribe to an idea where we need to be striving to be striveless, right? Because there are some philosophies out there. It's like, well, we shouldn't be striving for anything. I don't agree at all. I think it's very, very important for us to strive and to grow your bank account and to be very strategic in our society. Otherwise, you're left in the dust. Otherwise, your kids are screwed. It's important to pass those things on. However, you are not those things. Just the awareness starts helping shift the mental model.
So as you said that, I'm just curious, being that you have kids, as I do, everyone gets an award versus how we grew up. Like, look, there was first, there was second, there was third.
Yeah, sure.
Where does this fall in this? Because I agree. Look, I love to strive to get better every single day, but it's not for monetary reasons. It's for what I'm hearing here is like, look, I want to go help a billion people find their truest selves. Okay. Yeah. Anyone can get behind that. So my question is specific to we grew up versus how the kids are now, where it's like everyone gets an award, everybody's cool versus a first, second, third idea. How does this fall into play in what you're trying to do? And maybe they don't come together. Maybe it has nothing to do with one another. But that's just what I think of, is because I love to compete, but it's not necessarily to win. I want to perform at my very best. So what's your thoughts there?
Yeah, it's a great question. So failure is the most important lesson we can have in our lives. And we're sheltered from failure through college. Maybe you get bad grades, but you still progress to the next year. You still get to, you go from sophomore to junior to senior, right? There's no real consequence to failure when we're young, in a lot of ways, right? We have our families, right? We fail in school, we still have a house, right? We still have a place to come to. We still have people that love us. As you get older, you buy a house, mortgage crash, you're screwed. You may not have family members anymore. What do you do, right? Like, real things are on the line. And we don't learn those skills and we don't embrace failure. I have a lot of young people who come to me and they're so afraid of failure. And I wonder why. Why are you so afraid of failure? I want every young individual to fall flat on their face as soon as physically possible and feel the immense pain of that experience. Because what it does is it brings you perspective. My God, that is the most important life lesson in the world, of getting perspective on life and struggle. And when you have a really intense failure, you can look back and say, man, I learned so much here, right? I'm a better person for it. It pressure tests you. And it's interesting, like my son and I started learning how to skateboard recently. My son's 7 years old. And it's one of the few sports that I've found that really embody like my entire mental model, my entire worldview in a nice package. One aspect of it is you look at everybody out there and they're skateboarding and the board is $99, right? Like you can't get better gear necessarily. Like you can get some slightly better bearings or whatever, but like it's a piece of wood and some wheels, and it's up to you to make that piece of wood and wheels work. And it's up to you to embrace the fact that you're going to have to fail 5,000 times. And it's not just failure. It's not like soccer or something where I'm like running laps and like, I need to get better endurance and practice and practice. Like, yeah, I feel some pain while I'm practicing, but like skateboarding is like, I look at something and I go, holy shit, I'm going to be in a lot of pain. I'm going to have to fall 500 times for this thing, for my mind-body connection to actually work, right? And I got to believe that I'm going to have to do it, right? And I'm going to nail it even though I'm failing over and over and over and hurting the shit out of myself and like bloodying up the sides of my ankles, that's life, right? Like that's real life. And I haven't found an entity that teaches you real life like skateboarding, but it all comes back to failure. And it all comes back to your question about how important it is. Because if you give everybody an award, right, then there's no concept of failure. But then when they hit the world, right, then when they hit 35 and that epic fail actually happens, their entire life comes crashing down.
Yeah, it is interesting, man, because not embracing failure, we've seen this happen many times. And when people finally do fail, because that is a certainty in life. Everyone is going to fail, right?
Yeah.
You just inspired me to go get a skateboard. So my mom and my wife are going to be pissed at you, John. It's awesome. It's hilarious because I love it, because even the thought, I was like, ooh, that's going to hurt. Like, I don't know if I have that, but I'm going to do it. You talk about finding your why and use a specific word. You say grounding yourself in a sense of perspective. The word grounding is really important to me. I want to kind of dig into your brain. What does that mean to you, brother? Because you talked about your own journey that you had discovering yourself. What is this grounding idea? Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, every day I ground myself in what I call a baseline level of gratitude and a baseline level of perspective. And I call it baseline for a reason, because people start with the concept of gratitude, but they start at surface level. I'm grateful to have a job. Oh yeah, well, damn right, you should be grateful to have a job. But I'm grateful to have a roof. I'm grateful to not get rained on, okay? I'm grateful to have a light switch that's right here that I can touch, and in the evening, my lights come on, right? I'm not candle lit. I'm not living in the 1800s where surgery had no anesthesia. Okay. I have a toilet. I have a crapper. Okay. And when I take a dump, I flush the toilet and it goes away. It goes somewhere. I don't have to deal with it. Right. That's my baseline level of gratitude. I wake up and I'm just elated that I have a fridge that I could open the fridge. There's friggin' eggs in there. Okay. I don't have to have chickens. That's where I start every day. And when I fall out of that, I fall into the trap that I had done in my 20s, right? It's if then statements. Oh man, you know, like I got to get promoted and I got to deal with all this stuff. But then I always go back to baseline level of gratitude, right? And the perspective is within that, right? The perspective that, my God, somebody making $60,000 a year in the United States, although it is difficult to live in the United States, right? That's 1%. It's 1% of the world that makes that kind of money. 1% of the entire world. Like, look around. Your surroundings might be abundant, right? Your neighbors might be living abundant lives. And we should be so grateful for the fact that we are, but we're shielded from the realities that many people are facing around the world, right? Living in squalor, not having toilets, no electricity. Like, this is what people are facing, billions and billions of people. More the majority than the minority who are facing that scenario today, right? But we have a laptop. I have a podcast microphone. I have the ability to buy clothing, right? So every day I start there, man, and it really washes away any kind of problems. It's out of the pages of Stoic philosophy, you know, in a lot of ways. We're told in Stoic philosophy to look at a glass and to ponder the glass, right? The fact that the glass was even formed, the fact that water could be filled in the glass. The fact that it doesn't impart a taste on my water, like littlest things that you take awareness to also help put you in the present moment. And that's what I try to do every day. And by no means am I perfect on that, right? I am up against the same societal forces that everyone else is facing.
So in order to do this, do you quite literally, I'm just getting tangible. Like,
yeah.
Is it quite literally, I look at the glass and I say, okay, I'm thankful for that. Cause I do a gratitude exercise with my family every time we sit down.
Yeah.
You're grateful for it. And a lot of times my son's like, I'm grateful for pizza, Gatorade and whatever, my shoes. And I'm like, that's cool. No judgment. I'm happy as hell that you are grateful. Right. But I guess, keeping perspective, because what you're talking about is first world problems that we all fall. I shouldn't say all of us. A lot of us living in the U.S. fall trapped to. How do you keep that perspective, brother? Because, okay, Stoic philosophy, look at the glass and it's like, okay, appreciate that it's been made. But I'm just curious, is there a process? Do you literally write things down? How do you keep the perspective other than going and visiting people that aren't as lucky and as not lucky, maybe that's the wrong word, not as... I don't even know
what the same, not in the same mindset, right? Not in the same mindset. I don't journal about it per se. I create a lot of posts on LinkedIn and I guess I do journal about it a lot. If I really think about it, right? Because I'm creating YouTube videos about it. I'm creating LinkedIn content about it. I'm constantly in that frame of reflection. But being in that frame of reflection so much over the past 6 years, it's given me a lot of clarity. It's given me a lot of clarity mentally, clarity of thought, clarity in my speaking. I know how to break it down because I've been thinking about it for so very long. And so it literally just comes down to starting by coming back to awareness, right? It is just an awareness. It's waking up in the morning and saying, and just looking at something in a different way. It's seeing the sunlight pour in your windows, getting up, not thinking about anything, just staring off at the sunrise, right? Oh, it's so pink. It's so pretty this morning, right? It starts there. And then I'll sit with my coffee in the morning. I'll sit next to the fireplace and I'll be writing a LinkedIn post or something like that, reflecting on things that are happening in my life. And I'm watching the steam rise off of my cup of coffee, right? It's just looking at things and not being in that go, 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 that constant hustle mentality that we have in our society. But it just starts with staring off at a really pretty flower, right? And it sounds silly. Like it sounds silly because it's not something we do in our society. Listening to the wind, through the trees. I wake up in the morning, man, and I am elated to just hear the birds. I love listening to birds singing. I love it. Like I'll open the door and I'll be just sipping my cup of coffee. And it just puts me in this really peaceful state. And I think that's really all anybody really wants, right? Like we just want a sense of peace. That's it.
Do you have a lot of Eastern influence in your life, i.e. meditation, Buddhism?
No, interesting. Never had it, man.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting, because that's kind of, you're doing a lot of it already.
Yeah, I know.
If I'm listening to this and look, 250,000 people on LinkedIn. Cool. Some people might be like, dude, that's amazing. How did you do that? Are they all your friends? Yada, yada. But it's the amount of influence that you're able to possibly impart to these human beings through your journaling or posts. What was the purpose when you started? Was it literally, this is part of what I'm going to do, and people gravitated towards it? How did that all come about? Because again, a lot of people on this show, that listeners, they want 250,000 people so they can help or even build their business. So how'd you go about it?
Many people start their personal brands for the wrong reasons, or they have a financial goal in mind. And there's nothing wrong with having a financial goal in mind when it comes to it. But if you start with the mentality that you're going to learn and you're going to help people, that's it. Zero expectations. That also is another big issue that we have in society, right? Everything is an expectation. I expect to get promoted next year, right? If it doesn't happen, then I'm not going to be as happy, right? Once again, if then statements. So the expectations really, really tend to hurt us. But I I started and I said, I'm going to do two things. I'm going to learn. I'm going to reflect. I'm going to become a better writer and I'm going to become a better speaker. I have no expectation here and let's just see what happens. And that was it.
It's a beautiful philosophy. In fact, I heard the other day, frustrations are a result of unmet expectations.
Absolutely.
Pretty tough to have frustrations if you don't have any expectations of it all.
Yeah, yeah. But there is a nuance in here, right? You set, because somebody listening is going to be like, well, expectations, like you got to set goals. Because it comes back to striving to be striveless. And I'm not striving to be striveless. I'm very strategic. I'm super strategic about the amount of money that I'm making, the investments that I'm making. These are all very important things, but I'm not expecting anything to happen. Every day I work super hard. I put in my time on my day job. I put in my time on my podcast and my YouTube, and I have amazing conversations like this with you. And, but at the end of the day, there's no expectation of anything. I'm not expecting to get promoted. I don't even care. Right? I'm just expecting to have a great day. I'm expecting to listen to the birds. I'm expecting to watch the sun set. I'm expecting to play Monopoly with my son. Like very small things, like just things in the moment that are enjoyable.
Well, and that's clear, even with the vision of Project 1B. I mean, the expectation or the goal, maybe it is, is 1 billion people. So at some point, 1 billion human beings will be influenced or touched through this mentality and this idea. I'm curious, just because I love this question. I know as much as you write, I just have to imagine you're a pretty voracious reader. I'm guessing. Yeah. What are some of the most impactful books you've read that have really shaped some of this thinking and some of these philosophies that have allowed you to become at peace and really be able to just watch the birds and not worry about what's happening in the future, but rather really embracing the present moment?
Yeah. So from an embracing of the present moment scenario, one book really opened my eyes, which was You Are Here by Thich Nhat Hanh. Very, very simple writing style. I almost stopped reading it because it felt so simplistic to me. But the core concept in there is that breathing puts you in a state of the present moment. And it's just as simple as in-breath, out-breath. In-breath, out-breath. It's just recognition of your breathing patterns makes your mind stop, right? So if you want to turn off your mind, which a lot of people have trouble with, right? Because the mind is constantly racing. My mind is never racing. I'm just here. And the reason why I am is partly influenced by that book, You Are Here by Thich Nhat Hanh. So that's a really good one. Another book, Code of the Extraordinary Mind by Vishen Lakhiani. Vishen wrote this, I think, in 2018, pretty recent. But he talks about the detachment of your goals from your sense of who you are. So if you really want to try to do that detachment, that's a helpful book. Ryan Holiday, Ego is the Enemy. Just a recognition of the ego, the fact that we even have it, is a big influence on me. Because you start to recognize like the ego in you and why it does what it does. Well, geez, once you read it, you go, okay, I'm aware of it. And once you have awareness of it, you can defeat it. And that's the same mental model as Eckhart Tolle. Eckhart Tolle, great books. I believe his book is called A New Earth. And he talks a lot about that. It's like just the mere recognition of the fact that you have an ego is what will defeat the ego. So that's really good. And another great book, Man's Search for Meaning, by Viktor Frankl. He was in a concentration camp, he was there for a couple years. After he got out of the concentration camp, he wrote his book, Man's Search for Meaning, in eight hours, I believe he wrote his book. And you know, here's a guy who's in a concentration camp and he says, the only thing you have control over is your mental state of the situation. So here's a guy in a concentration camp and he is making a choice, right? To not be in this mental state of being completely lost, right? He's still got something in him when he's walking in the cold, right? Negative temperatures with no shoes on, getting no food, watching everyone around him wither away and die. And he is choosing to have a different mental state. And so that's like the depth of where a human could go as far as the situation goes, right? You're in a concentration camp. You have nothing. You have no clothes. You have stripped of identity, right? No identification with form whatsoever. And yet he had the mental capacity to choose how he was reacting to the situation.
Yeah, I love the word choice too. And by the way, if you haven't checked it out, he has a new one out, which I know the man is no longer alive.
So yeah.
Clear. Yes to Life. They are Viktor Frankl. It are lectures, I believe, in 1946. They found it. They just published it recently. It's amazing to hear the perspective. Again, go back to that word. If you ever want to gain some real perspective, just read either. I mean, Man's Search for Meaning is incredible.
Yeah. That's what these books do. All of these books, we don't take enough time to read or pursue any kind of knowledge outside of our day jobs in most cases, right? And when people come to me, sometimes they come to me and they express that they have so much clarity after speaking to me. And the reality is I barely said anything during the conversation, which shows me that in 1 hour of just their own personal reflection, speaking to me out loud about what they're going through, they're feeling a sense of more clarity. Imagine, if you will, you spend 3 hours a day doing that every day, 365 days for 6 years, right? Imagine if you reflected, imagine if you were to just carve out a few of the hours that you're spending 2,000 hours a year in your day job on self-reflection. Nobody's doing it. And reading is that path to learning about other people, the struggles that other people are facing.
Yeah, I mean, history repeats itself. If we haven't learned that, this is clear. It is interesting, though, because we talk about whether it's journaling, meditation, self-reflection, even grounding. That's why I asked about the word grounding. Even just being in nature without shoes on, the whole idea of connecting to the energy of the earth. This is not woo-woo. This is real. The world is energy. There's some real stuff to that. I'm curious, and I've just, because the question is there and I want to hear your answer, is what does freedom mean to you, brother? When because of your outlook on life, because of this, not maybe transformation or whatever your journey was to discover yourself, what does freedom really mean to you today?
Yeah, there's a lot of different definitions of freedom. I believe there's a book by Brendan Burchard. He talks about like 7 different definitions of freedom, right? There's freedom from slavery. There's freedom from oppression. There's freedom of speech, right? So there's you could equate it to a lot of different things. I think I'm at a point now where I'm looking at the perspective of financial freedom. Like mentally, I feel free, right? I feel good about where I'm at mentally. I feel at peace, right? So I think one could equate freedom to a sense of peace. Another way to look at it is you can equate it to a sense of financial freedom. A lot of people are working in jobs that they don't necessarily like. The Gallup study, I think in 2016 and 2018, I believe the most recent one ratcheted up the amount of people. I think it was 75 to 80% of people worldwide are disengaged in their jobs, right? So by the numbers, 75% of people worldwide don't like what they're doing, and they're spending the large majority of their time in those situations, which is terrible. So for me, I don't dislike what I'm doing from a day job perspective. I like the people I work with. I like what I'm doing. But that's also a lever of perspective that I have too, because there are other people at the company who don't like what they're doing. They're unhappy. Why are they unhappy? Right? Are they unhappy because they have a $250,000 a year job, right? Have they lost the perspective, the fact that the Uber driver making $12 an hour would literally die to have that job, right? If you had that perspective, would you still dislike your job? Would you still be in that state? So it comes back to peace from perspective, but also it comes back to trying to build a nest egg up for yourself so that you can choose what you want to do with your time. Time freedom is very important for people because it's finite. And, you know, that's why I think it's also important to, you know, play the game, play the shell game, play the leverage, do what you got to do to make the money in Western society. But don't attach it to your sense of self-worth. Just recognize that it's a game.
I love it. The word choice continues to pop up with you, brother. And I love yeah. that you, it is a choice. You make a choice every single moment.
Absolutely.
Whether you are grateful, whether you have perspective, and some of these tricks, you guys, like I literally have my 7 daily reminders. And one is keep perspective in parentheses. My brother-in-law, Dick Fong, he passed away in his mid-40s. I bet you every problem I have, he wishes to God that he had that opportunity. And I don't have to, I know he would want that. Yeah. Brother, I want to kind of end with giving you just the opportunity. What didn't I ask you that I should have known enough to ask that you're like, dang it, I gotta share this with the audience.
Oh man, it's a good question. I mean, I think we covered a lot of stuff here. I don't know if I have anything for you on that one, man.
For a guy as deep as you, man, I was expecting.
I know. I'm sorry. I really laid it all out. But man, I go back to happiness not being a destination. It's not a deficiency for us. I mean, if I leave anyone on this episode with something, just one thing, it's that we've been trained that our sense of happiness is some sort of deficiency that we must chase and fill in our lives. And that is the farthest thing from the truth. It's many factors that we can dig into internally that will get us there without any external thing. And I think that really for me is the most important takeaway. And if you leave the episode with questions, then I've done my job in getting you to say, huh. And when you say, huh, that's when you can inject new ideas. That's when you can potentially start seeking answers that are outside of the template that society, that school, that everyone around us is using.
Well, I'm glad I asked the question because I will tell you right now, I know the title of this episode. It is Happiness is Not a Destination. I mean, it's clear as day. I didn't pick it up, but I love it. Brother, obviously LinkedIn would be a good place, but where can all our listeners connect with you online, support Project 1B and everything you're doing?
Yeah. So I'm on YouTube. You could just search for John Marty. Pretty easy. And the LinkedIn and my website, John Raphael Marty. R-A-P-H-A-E-L, John Raphael Marty. I couldn't get John Marty because it was taken. And I didn't want to do like johnmarty.biz. So I went long form on there. But the podcast episodes are on there. I got some guidebooks on, you know, LinkedIn strategies, career-related things, because going back to the leverage side of things, right? Like I'm trying to teach people the leverage to get the things that they want, but also on the other side of it, I'll help you get what you want, but remember that it's not tied to happiness as a destination.
That's good stuff. You guys check it out. If nothing else, like you said, you know, I get to ask questions and I get to have amazing perspective talking to John. I love your outlook on it, brother. Thank you so much for taking the time and just the way you show up in this world, man. It's such a refreshing way. And it really is. It's very calming and very peaceful.
Thanks, man. It's taking a while to get there. Let me tell you.
Well, you make it look easy, brother. I got to tell you, you guys, obviously, I love what he's doing. I want to support helping kids have this perspective. We could all use it. So I know you guys got a ton out of this episode. No question about it. In the meantime, you know what? If you want to journal a little bit on this, go to Amazon. John works there. My book is literally sitting there. Champions Daily Playbook. Go grab it. It's like 10 bucks. You can journal. You can have some perspective. Talk to yourself about self-reflection. Some of these things are all in that book. I think you'll get a ton of gain out of it. Until next time, you guys, have an amazing week. Continue transcending life. We'll talk to you then. Thank you so much for listening. If this content is delivering value to you, please make sure to subscribe, rate, and review us. That helps us build this community, and that is what we are all about. Building this community as big as we can, helping as many people as we can, and deliver as much value as possible. Be sure to head over to letsgowinpodcast.com for information on my coaching courses, and make sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Let's Go Win 365. Let's go win and transcend in life.
This is the Let's Go Win podcast with your host, J.M. Ryerson.